Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today, and we've got a great show headed your way, and we'll get to it in just a minute. We'll talk about what's going on the PGA Tour. They're at the Travelers Championship in Cromwell, Connecticut, and we'll get into that. And also the women are playing a major. They've got the Women's PGA Championship, the men on the Champions Tour, the U.S. Senior Open being played right now, too. So a lot of big golf happening in the world, and we're going to be joined by our good friend Art Selinger, the Power Drive, Long Drive champion, club manufacturer, not manufacturer, assembler, if you will, and just a guy who's got hot opinions about pretty much everything. As I've said 1,000 times, our best shows are when before the on-air button is hit. Before on-air, once we get on the air, it's great. It's amazing before we get on the air or in between commercials. And that was the case. Just you should have been listening the last 20 minutes. We had a great show. Frank Bassett in our Nashville studios joins us. Frank, have you all talked out yet?
I got to tell you one thing that came out of our pre-show fun. And we're not going to talk about what we talked about pre-show, trust me.
Yeah.
But the one comment that Art made that I love that we have to steal, so he's probably copywriting the damn thing right now, is I've seen some kids – from playing golf, junior golf, whatever, that couldn't play dead in a Western.
You like that one?
I love that line.
Like a Mel Brooks line, huh?
It's a Mel Brooks line. We need to call your buddy Burton Gilliam and talk about that.
Well, Art's sitting around. He's got a million of them, so let's get into it with him. Art Selinger joins us now with Selinger's Power Golf. And what do you call yourself now, Art? I mean, you're a former long drive champion, and you owned Long Drivers of America, blah, blah, blah. And now you've got Selinger's Power Golf, and you assemble clubs, you put clubs together for people, they come into your studios. If somebody asks you, Art Selinger, what is your title? What do you call yourself?
Well, I own Selinger's Power Golf. That's 2 custom-fitting studios in Dallas, and we do assemble our own stuff that we fit, all name-brand stuff. We also have a relationship with a couple other golf courses in town where we do their custom-fitting and building. But mainly, we're also Selinger's Branding and Events, where we sell lifestyle items and merchandise to numerous corporate customers. We're also a travel destination management company. So we have a lot going on, 27 employees. But on the golf side, we're fitters, we're builders, and okay, we have a lot of experience, and that's what we do. And I try to get it around and play some golf every now and then. And other than that, Tim, I've lost my hair a long time ago. I don't know what.
Tell us about, how's your golf going? Because you got your amateur status back. How long has it been now? 3 or 4 or 5 years?
Actually, not that long. Don't age me that much.
Couple years?
Couple of years. Okay. And too busy at work to play very much going forward right now. I'm playing good, but I'm not committed to going out and trying to travel. I played a lot last year. I made the U.S. Senior Amateur, which was fun. It was a good experience. Entries end July 6th for this year's Senior Am, and I've looked like 3 times at the website. I haven't played a tournament for about 4 months. I had a lot of injuries, and it's hard to play golf hurt. I'm learning that. I've learned that over the years.
Yeah.
So trying to work on me right now and again, run our business. Golf has exploded, and we're fortunate to have been recognized by Golf Digest as a top 100 fitter and Golf Magazine as the top 20 fitter. So we do quite well in a very crowded market in Dallas-Fort Worth with other companies like Club Champion, Cool Clubs, and, of course, TruSpec. I encourage anybody listening, you know, I don't know what you can or can't do, but if you play the game and you have some sort of repeatable action and you're looking to get the most out of your golf clubs, go get fit. That doesn't mean you have to fly to Dallas and see us. Just go get fit by somebody who knows what they're doing. Be very careful of free fittings, big box store fittings, fittings in a cart. If somebody walks up with a fitting cart, that's called expedited selling. That's not fitting. So if your iron fitting doesn't take 90 minutes and it takes 10, run. That's pretty much it.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, there's probably, I'm not going to use the word scam, but there's a lot of golf that is, as you just said, projected to be this when in reality it's
kind of a shell game, and they're not really getting. And we talked about this as part of the pre-show was even the loft and the lie of your clubs. What you think you have, you may not have, and what you think you're hitting as a 7-iron might indeed be more of a 5-iron or whatever. That's all part of it, right? If you don't go to the right person, you're really not sure what you have in your bag.
Well, we want to fit. We want to be in there with our customer based on the fitting and the recommendation. Numbers don't lie when it comes to, you know, the launch monitors and things like that. But we take it to the next degree. We will not call our order into any major manufacturer. We're not going to call our order into an assembly line. Our fitter is going to communicate with our builder in-house, and we are going to get that set spec'd out for our player, allow them to try it, basically be a tour van without wheels, and then let them come back to us after a few rounds and some range sessions. And if some tweaking needs to be done, we'll do that. We lose control when the manufacturer assembles. They're just too busy. They're not golfers. The tour departments at these places are not doing your building. I've been to these assembly lines, and they're very rapid. They're there to glue, grip, and ship. And I sure hope you get what you wanted. You should have your stuff spec'd out if you choose to go that way. They also take a long time to get those clubs. So it's the process you choose. That's really critical, especially if you're doing something unique, which is for a junior player, somebody who needs something either extra long, a little short, a little bit more flexible. You know, using certain grip weights are very important. You know, head weights are very important. The club has to balance. So I feel like I've got some great people. I know I do. I have some of the best in the business that know what they're doing. You know, they've been doing it for more than 2 decades. So we're very fortunate. So that's what's going on. But there's a lot going on in the old game of golf. I mean, I really, by the way, have to say, I like the way they've done it. You know, Masters in April, PGA in May. U.S. Open comes right back at you in June, the Open Championship coming in July, and then, of course, FedEx Championship, the finals, going the end of August. So I kind of like the schedule. I'm getting used to it. I think it's really cool. And it was a really good U.S. Open. I know we haven't talked, but I really thought it was a great U.S. Open at a wonderful venue. It was very intriguing television, and a lot of guys hit some shots under pressure that were amazing. And I think the person that won it hit the best shots under pressure. So deserved it.
There's certainly no doubt about that. It was one of the better U.S. Opens we've watched in a long time. It was something. But, Art, let me ask you this. We talk about you know, the schedule and how it's set up right now. We like it very much. I mean, I do too. But in the press conference that Jay Monahan had, actually one of the longest press conferences he's had, period, and we all know why, and we'll get into that. But going back to not a wraparound season, but a season within the calendar year, is giving the players what they've been wanting. Because, well, you can speak to this also, but it was difficult for the players to take a break in the fall because they would be so far behind on the FedEx points, you know, list by the time they started playing in January, February.
Absolutely. The season is too long.
Or March. Too many.
And then if you start there at Farmers, let's just say in San Diego, where a lot of the big names always did, because they did want a break. And remember, you're asking a lot of the big name players, hey, it's Ryder Cup year. Hey, it's President's Cup year.
Yeah.
I mean, who says no to the Tiger invite? Obviously, that's guaranteed money. So you go to the Bahamas and you play. And then you might, of course, if you're a PGA Tour player and you're from Australia, you're going to go back and play your home open there at Australia Open. You might play something like that. You might get some really nice seed money to go play something overseas. But there are big events in the fall. And if you start that far behind the eight ball, especially with the value of the FedEx Cup and things like that, I mean, I just don't know how you play so much. I'm a fan to, you know, I know it's going to hurt some cities and some charities and stuff like that, but though there are a lot of events, I don't really know what the answer is, but there's too many events. Golf lasts too long, and, you know, there just doesn't seem to be any ending to it.
Well, I think that the seasons are part of, and by the way, Frank, bringing that up, isn't that all, I think, to the point of, Greg Norman, if you will, Phil, whoever else is doing the Live Golf events and all the things that are going on. This is a direct relation, correlation to what they're doing to counter that. They up the ante, right? Suddenly there's more money available that nobody seemed to know there was money. Now there's more money, and some of these tournaments are getting $5 to $10 million more in the pot. At some point, I'm curious.
It's got to come from the sponsors.
At some point, is somebody going to thank Liv to say, hey, I may be staying on the PGA Tour, but now I'm playing for $2.5 million first place, or close to $3 million instead of $1.2 million or $1.3 million. I mean, doesn't that tell you maybe that Phil was kind of on board when he said, you know what, PGA Tour is a little bit greedy, and they kind of do it. Until they put their feet to the fire, they weren't going to come up with more money, were they, Art?
You know, I honestly think they weren't. And I know that there has, you know, now you got three invitational events for 50 players that are valued at $90 million. I saw Genesis went from 12 to 20. Memorial went from 12 to 20. Players went from 20 to 25. I've always, you know, I have a few opinions here. And can I throw those out real quick?
Sure you can.
Yeah,
that's why you're here.
First and foremost, the general golfing public, and nothing that's ever talked about, it's the most secretive thing in the world, is, yes, I agree that these players are independent contractors. They have an incredible amount of risk. They do have to pay their own expenses. There's no guarantee. You could lose your job in a year, 2 years, and be gone. And next thing you know, you're, you know, selling cell phones or working at Pizza Hut. I mean, I don't know what the hell you're doing, but there's a lot of risk. There's no guaranteed contracts, you know, and we can name names all day. I mean, who would have thought Smiley Kaufman would be where he is? And I mean, what a nice young guy, and was playing really great. And now, I mean, he cannot find the back of the ball. So there's a lot of players, A, based through injury, or B, just because of golf demons, can have it one day, and then they're gone. And then they're looking to be in the insurance business, what have you. So I was going somewhere with this. This guaranteed, you know, situation, again, the PGA Tour coming up with all this cash, but nobody understands the pension plan for these so-called independent contractors that exist. For those that are vested and play well, there are people that are making an incredible amount of money post-golf. So as everybody compares everything, the one thing that needs to be talked about is the pension, and it has not been brought up. It is phenomenal what kind of money these players have coming to them based on cuts, wins, and money won. And that has not been discussed, and that bothers me. But, yes, they definitely helped them find their wallets. Century Tournament of Champions went to $20 million. So, again, people that win a golf tournament and they play these no-cut events, that's a tough deal. Imagine being a rookie or a first-year guy who doesn't get in any of those invitational, any of that stuff. They miss out on basically $150 million worth of golf tournaments or more, and yet they still have to play and finish in points against the players that get these WGC fields and stuff like that.
Right.
So last point is if Norman gets world ranking points for this, it's game over.
Yeah. I'm telling you. I think so too. Yeah.
That's a big gig right there. European Tour stepping up and saying, hey, you guys can still play here, even though I can't recognize hardly one name on that tour. They seem to not, you know, the days of playing for country for Ryder Cup and not getting paid, President's Cup not getting paid, another week away from your family. I'll finish with one thing. Just don't stand up in front of a microphone and say anything except the following. This is for pure money. Don't tell me you're growing the game. Don't tell me it's an exciting new product. Just say it's 54 holes. It's a damn shotgun start. We play against pretty much the same people every single time, and it's a money grab, and there's no cut, and I'm guaranteed to make money. Money, money. Just say money. Don't, I mean.
money.
Hey. When Mitchell talked about the 6 and 7 year old that he encountered in London, and he felt like he was growing the game, that really, really irritated me. You're not growing the game. Trust me, when they go to Portland next week, you know, at Pumpkin Ridge, they've already had 55 members resign, and they lost 70% of their corporate outings from this event going there. So there is pushback. Don't tell me you're growing the game. Just tell me it's an organized league where the players are fortunately being financed by unlimited fund, because there, as Mike Wan said from the USGA, there is no return on investment. You cannot lay out $3 billion. This is not a business model. This is just a pure money grab. And well, Norman's vendetta is working.
Well, he has had a vendetta since the WGC idea was stolen from him, and he was put out to pasture over that whole situation. But let's talk about the official World Golf rankings for a minute. 54 holes? No. It has to be a 72-hole event as it exists today. Who is the official World Golf Ranking Committee? Art, you know that. I mean, it's the PGA Tour, okay?
It's the USGA. Monahan has a vote. I'm sure Seth Waugh has a vote. I'm sure Mike Wan has a vote. I don't know if Fred Ridley has a vote. I don't know who's on that.
Yeah, the Masters. Yet. Masters has a
Masters
vote.
Masters has two guys, not Ridley, but two other guys on their committee. Are on there. So it's like a dozen guys or so from around the world that decide that. And that is, again, to establish world golf rankings for getting into majors and everything else, unless you've got some exemption to get in. They're all going to be playing. Anybody that's in, whether they're in the live events or not, they're going to play at the Open Championship. So the first two that came up were the U.S. Open and British Open, if you will, and nobody's gotten hurt from either of those yet. I kind of think at some point, and I've said this before, that there's going to be some understanding, because the fact that somebody's spending this money, it kind of humors me. And again, maybe to Phil's point about he knows the inner workings, certainly a lot better than any of us, of what goes on in the PGA Tour, despite the pension, as you said, Art, and we can talk about that. But the PGA Tour is an 800-pound gorilla. They get to do what they want to do, and they kind of rule the world. But for them to say, as one of the criticisms, when they get into the dirty money part, okay, and then they get into, and by the way, there's no return. Why do you care? Why does Jay Monahan care if you've got a bad business? It doesn't matter to him. Go ahead. Lose all the money you want and go out of business is fine with Jay Monahan. They act like that's a criticism. Therefore, a player shouldn't be interested in doing that because the business model above him that's paying him, it's not really sustainable. Well, first of all, it is, because they've got trillions, a few billion here and there. It's like Elon Musk buying Twitter. Okay, I'm worth $300 million. I got $40 billion laying around. They don't care, so why should you care? That always humors me that the return on investment is something that they all talk about on this side of the PGA Tour side. The Saudis have to laugh at that, go, we're not saying we're getting a return on the investment. Almost right, we're just doing it because we want to do it for the various reasons we're doing it, and we can afford to do it. So why do you care?
The PGA Tour is out of business if they don't have sponsors. There is no PGA Tour.
No.
So if, you know, remember Cadillac got thrown under the bus for Mexico City?
Yeah,
because Trump owned Doral and said some disparaging remarks about Latin Americans, and so boom, gone. But they had somebody else to pick it up. You know, Carlos Slim's a pretty rich guy down there in Mexico. He's got a lot of pull.
If he wants to do it, he wants to do it, right?
Yeah.
If somebody wants to start a business and says, you know, I'm going to open a hotel, and I'm not going to make any money, but it's going to be the best hotel you've ever been in, but I got enough. Why do you care? You're not going to go. Well, I'm not going to go because he's got a bad business model.
Trump.
You're going to do whatever you want
to
do.
They did it to Trump. Nobody wanted to. They took the tournaments away.
I got
to
ask you this, too, because Norman brought up a good point. When the source of the money comes up, right, and the source of the money is coming from the Saudi family, all that. And Norman said, by the way, and he certainly did his research, somebody did, said the PGA Tour has 23 sponsors. And he knew the number, 23 sponsors that do over $40 billion worth of business with the Saudi royal family / government. So are you now going to tell me, Norman says to the PGA Tour, are you going to get rid of your sponsors? Because if that's one of your things is how dare you take that money? He looked into it and he found out that different people make components from Saudi Arabia. They got business with Saudi Arabia. Are you going to get rid of those sponsors that, as Frank just said, are your blood source of the only way the PGA Tour continues is with the sponsors? Okay, then you're going to stop them from doing business with Saudi Arabia, right?
Aramco?
I'm sure that Jay Monahan's like, I don't have an answer for that.
You're right. You're right. And the PGA Tour has PGA Tour China. And
China's not
like
perfect.
The most credible situation.
Socially correct.
Right. And Jack Nicklaus has designed golf courses in Saudi Arabia and has projects under construction, and players have gone over there. So he doesn't want to lose his marquee names and his marketability of his players. The players on the PGA Tour, they do complain, but they have to understand it's the PGA Tour, you know, that found FedEx. It's the PGA Tour that found Charles Schwab. They found AT&T. They've done all this stuff. I've always said for a few years that the PGA Tour, you know, needed to make some changes for their players. Number one is I feel every player that plays in a PGA Tour event that, of course, helps sell tickets should never leave that event losing money. Having been there for a week, spending all that money, they deserve an $8,000 to $10,000 per week stipend that does not go against the money they earn. They should not go to an event. They should not spend $250,000 of their own money per year. You know, and then you look at their developmental tours, which I think they treat like just, I mean, it's they treat them worse, as bad as single-A baseball. The fees that they take from these kids to play the Q schools, pre-qualifiers, the call. I mean, you guys know I represent Jamie Sedlowski, and the first week of the Canadian Tour was a few weeks back, and he finished T12. He shoots 70-64, 71-66, and he tied for 12th. He lost the golf tournament by four shots, and he spent $4,500, and he made $3,300. So net lost $1,200, and the guy beat 144 players. How is that possible? Right. How do they, in these developmental tours, Latin America, China, and Canada, inject just $5 million into those purses? Corn Ferry should be playing for another $10 million total in purses so that these kids that want to play don't lose money making money. That doesn't seem possible to me that can still be happening.
Well, so, and that's the point that they're bringing up is if you compare them, and they want to be compared, if you're Tiger, and I know he's at the echelon, but if you compare these as athletes, and now let's look at it versus NBA, NFL, it's not even close. When you're spending money, can you imagine LeBron James being told that he has to pay for the hotel and his road trip and his meals and everything while he goes on the road with the Lakers? He'd be looking at you sideways going, what are you talking about? That's what they have to do. They have to pay for their caddy. You know, people don't really understand that. And as you said, Art, it doesn't affect Jordan Spieth. It doesn't affect JT and these other guys who have millions and millions coming from sponsors and all that. But it affects the other 90% that we don't hear an awful lot about who are trying to go home to – and we talk about – Frank and I talk about, and no disparaging, but Stephen Bowditch, you know, locally here, won good, a couple of tournaments guy. Back in like, what, 15, 16, yep. Won $1.5 million. He was flying in, and as you said, Art, guys just lose it. Various reasons, they lose it. It's gone. Injuries, different things. And then you're going to your wife going, or whoever, and just trying to explain, or going to your dad, a sponsor, trying to get more money, saying, well, I got to somehow keep playing in these tournaments that I get no money for unless I make it to the weekend. And even then, depends on, I don't make much money. It's a tough pill. Nobody in other sports have to do anything close to that.
No, and then you lose your status. So a guy like Bowditch can play Valero where he won, and he's got no other spots to play. There are people that have no other spots to play. So I look at some of the young players that have chosen to go to the LIV Tour, you know, Taylor Gooch, Hudson Swafford, just to name a few young Americans. And maybe they just say to themselves, I don't want to be that victim. I'm probably not going to win a bunch of major championships. I don't want the grind of traveling 28 to 32 weeks. This is money that will set me up for life. And, you know, just call it what it is. I wish somebody would just stand up and say, this is dollar. As you walk out with a T-shirt that's just got nothing but dollar signs all over. And that's really what it is. They don't care. Nobody's going to win a LIV event like Matthew Fitzpatrick winning the U.S. Open or Justin Thomas winning the PGA or even somebody else like Max Homa winning the L.A. Open. And when they get interviewed, they're not going to cry because they're going to be on the wall at Riviera or at Colonial or getting the tartan jacket. They might cry because they can't believe how many zeros are going to hit their damn bank account.
Cheers of joy.
5 years now, again, but just call the spade a spade. It's all 100%, I get to play half as much and make four times as more. Yeah. And that's it. That's it.
What difference is there in that and a guy who's a CPA or an attorney or a doctor that's moving to this other hospital? I'm going to leave the community hospital here. I'm a doctor. I'm going to leave this community hospital who truly needs me here, but I'm going to go to Vanderbilt in Nashville because they're going to pay me $1.5 million a year.
Yeah.
I mean, what difference is it? What is the difference?
And I don't get where the greed comes out. I mean, again, the criticism of, oh, they're doing it for money. Again, I say they're professional athletes. What professional athlete, I don't care if you're a bull rider, whatever you're doing that is in the realm of athleticism, you know what the prize money is. You know why you're doing it. You're not doing it to lose money because you just love bull riding. I love playing water polo, so I'm a professional water polo player in Great Britain. You do everything
for money. That's the difference just than like a professional and an amateur.
That's what I'm saying. So
Bobby Jones was an amateur.
They're so greedy to do it. I'm going, what world do you live in? And especially Art, in today's young guys, I don't know that there is the sense of history, right? Yeah, you'd love to if you're Spieth. Those guys are – but the new ones that keep coming in, and you know that they just keep reloading. New guys are coming in. The Texas guy who made the cut at the Open, can't remember his name, that Travis. Was a low amateur. Yeah. I mean, these guys are 22, 23 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd love to win a U.S. Open. But if you say to them – but, oh, by the way, here's this option over here, and you can go work for this .com and make a quick $20 million. That turns their head. They're like, well, okay, wait a minute. I can do that, and, okay, maybe I don't have PGA Tour status. But the money is going to have to – because that's human nature. I don't get where there's confusion. You're right. It should just be, look at me. I'm making a lot more money. And by the way, Art, who do you think we see Koepka is the next one that's going to go and play in the LIV events?
Bubba.
Any inkling of who else you think might be Bubba. Going that road?
Well, you knew Koepka was coming. When you saw Chase Koepka playing the first event, you know, listen, one thing he's done is he's taken care of his brother. Like, if you want him to play in your tournament, my brother needs a spot. And hey,
good
if
for
he
him.
Has to do so, let him do so. He's won four major championships. I think these players, now I'll mention the higher echelon players, really that come to mind are three major champions. I don't really put Sergio in that deal because I think he's pretty much done. But guys that can actually still win majors are Koepka, DJ, and Reed.
Yeah,
they
true.
How about DeChambeau?
I honestly don't know where his game is. I think he is really... hurt himself. I think he's hurt from the whole long drive stuff. I called that from day one when I've seen
did.
It up close, hitting 500 to 800 drivers and swinging that hard. So he ripped up his wrist. He broke the hook of the handmate right in the hand. You know, next thing is the back will go when there's, you know, other things, issues. And he's really jacked with his game. And I don't know, but I think these guys think that, well, again, DeChambeau is exempt for the U.S. Open for a long, long time, and he's got a few more years left in all the majors because you get a five-year exemption. And I'll tell you this, back to the world ranking thing. I got to tell you the one thing that hurt that they never should have done, and the world ranking situation would be very pure. Several years ago, they granted the 18 players that played in the Tiger Shootout world ranking points.
Yes.
And that mistake,
that precedent's going to hurt them.
Yeah.
And that, even though it was 72 holes, you don't have an event. And I remember tour players that weren't invited to that getting very irritated because that top 30, that top 50 in world ranking points is huge. Top 50 you get in every single major, WGCs. You got 18 guys going for the week to Bahamas playing a little exhibition and getting that stung. So I'm anxious to see what they do. These guys think, you know, in 3 years, LIV will play 14 events. I think it goes, doesn't it, Frank? It goes 8, 10, 12, 14?
Yeah.
And so... And again, who knows after 4 years if they might stop or not? I don't know. I don't know. And again, LIV is the Roman numerals for 54, and I think they're going to stay at 54 players, play 54 holes, and you get $54 million if you shoot 54, for God's sake. A lot of 54. Hey, Hornet shot 55 the other day, some Michigan pro. But anyway, don't know if 54 will ever happen. But – I just think that these guys say, hey, I can play 12 times. I can be home to see my kids. You know, Rory's played four in a row right now. I don't know the last time he's played four in a row. And he's played like six out of eight. I mean, he's playing a lot. PGA Tour can't – I think these guys think they're going to be able to play some majors. Then they'll fill their schedule in with some appearance fees to go maybe play in Asia and Australia. And they'll play 14, 16 times a year. Don't ever have to worry about making many cuts, if any. And, again, no, they won't have the – these young guys, again, the pension. I keep saying it. But there's some players that had pretty decent careers, not great, and they're in their early 60s right now, and they're grabbing $5 to $6 million a year out of their pension.
Yeah, that pension's huge. Most people don't understand it because it's never been – it's been very secretive.
But Art, even the pension, wasn't the pension, and I say recent, but I remember because I was talking, I think, to Justin Leonard, and it was probably 25 years ago. But the pension hasn't always been. Am I right on that? Didn't it only kind of come in, and I'm not sure what pushed it to say, but I think the players kind of, as I understood it, came together and said, hey, we need some kind of a pension. All these baseball players retire at 38, and they got millions. They got pension. Everybody's got a pension, and they kept coming, well, you're independent contractors. You can't have it both ways and say, you're independent. Do what you want to do, but no, you can't do this. So they came up with this pension. Again, I think it's in the last 30 or 40 years.
It is.
And you're right. Some of these guys have $30, $40, $50 million, a pot of gold in that pension.
More.
Yeah.
More
than that.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm saying decent players. I'm saying not the elite, but
right.
Because it's count how many cuts you make, how many this and this. There's a sizable amount of money for a lot of guys whose names we know, but maybe never won a major, maybe only won a couple of tournaments in their career, but were consistent and played a long time. There is a large amount of money, but I think if I remember right, their feet were kind of put to the fire. The PGA Tour was to even institute that. Because the players kind of were in an uprising saying, well, we got to do something for these guys that are done playing at 41. What do they do now? Well, there should be some money for them. Oh, okay, well, we'll do that. I think that's Phil's problem. That's where Phil got his, you know, anger about the PGA Tour. He's seen, I think, that they will do things only if they push. Finally, the tour will do something over the last 40 years that Phil's been around. I think that's his point of, you know, why don't you voluntarily help us? And they don't seem to do it.
Media rights are big. You know, Phil has a big part of that match deal. And, you know, and I know about rights fees and stuff like that at a much smaller scale, but I know the PGA Tour does own. That's one of their biggest assets of their portfolio is the shots that they own from the events that they own. Of course, they don't own any shots from the Masters. You know, everybody, all those tournaments own those rights. You know, just like baseball owns those rights. Of broadcast and stuff like that. So they own the shots and the rights. And so if me and Frank started this brand and we wanted a couple players and we wanted to show Justin Thomas coming down the stretch, winning the PGA championship there, you know, in Tulsa, we wanted to buy that footage, or let's just say from the Wells Fargo or whatever, from the PGA Tour, we're paying a very large sum of money for a very few seconds of footage, I promise you. So the KPMGs of the world that use these players, or the Rolexes that use these players, showing them winning and stuff like that, even if they're 2-second clips, they are paying. And but that is a revenue source of the PGA Tour. It's all that's to it.
Yeah, it is.
And it's just all that. But they have to also understand, again, I've been on the ownership side, and I understand the player's point of view. I really do. But when a tournament loses their sponsor and they go into their coffers and put up $5 or $7 million, and it's not the players who found FedEx. It's the tour that found FedEx for the players. And I understand without the players, there is no FedEx. I know it's back and forth. I get that. RBC, stuff like that, AT&T, and Farmers, and the Lisk, and Genesis, and it goes on and on and on and on. And that's that team finding them. And, yes, this spurred it. But, again, players, media rights, you know, are very big to them, I guess. I don't, you know, I see both sides, but I just have such a problem.
Yeah.
Just
the players see the money that's spent.
This press conference, you know, not once did he ever say anything about the word money. You can't tell me DJ is doing this because he wants to play a different tour, and he's upset with the PGA Tour, and he's upset with this. He got $125 million, period. Yeah. Yeah. He's like, heck with that, you know. And there's so many players that have no place to play. They gave the Arizona State kid and the Michigan State kid, you know, a bunch of money. I think they offered Pearson Cootie some money, and they turned it down. I read something from Kyle Cootie, his dad, who was quoted locally. They turned it down. So I think we'll see. And I don't know. The PGA Tour definitely coming out with this stuff. They don't want to lose any more young 20-somethings. I don't know. I thought that Victor Hovland was going to jump, and yeah, he hasn't yet. I honestly thought the rumor was there on Shoffley and Morikawa.
Because you don't know what you can believe either, because guys have in the past, Koepka and others, said, nope, not doing it, not interest. Right. No, that was in March. Have no interest. And I don't know if the dollars kept building or whatever happened, or you made bad about the market. Stock market went down. You're suddenly going, wait, he filled up
his Ferrari.
I just lost $10 million in the last 2 months, and I could make that up pretty quick. You know who I think is prime for it is Ricky Fowler.
Oh, well, he's already done it.
Ricky hasn't gone, has he?
Nope.
Well, I think he's already done it. I think it's just not announced yet.
I think he's very marketable, as we still know.
Oh, yeah.
And he's still a marquee guy. People know him. People like him. He's the image and everything else.
What about Bubba Watson?
Here's $100 million. I think Bubba will do it. I mean, at some point you go, especially Bubba. Bubba's like, now Ricky might think, I still got game and I still want majors. I still want to win an open or something else. Bubba's got his green jackets, and I think Bubba's like, you know what? I don't know how you say no. It's like anything else, right, Frank? As you said, you could leave a prestigious job here, but if some new young whatever business comes along and says, hey, we're going to triple what at some point you're like, okay, tripling, it changes my world. John Rahm was so wrong when he said, you know what, I asked my wife, and he threw the number out there, so it makes people go, oh, I guess that's the number they threw at him. I asked my wife, he says at the U.S. Open, if $400 million would change our life. And we both said, no, it really would. I'm going, yes, it would, John Rahm.
Yes, it would.
You haven't done the math. $400 million versus, I looked at his celebrity net worth, he's worth like $16 million, which ain't chump change.
No, he's not worth $16 million, so that celebrity net worth can go down the toilet. He's going to make $16 million this year alone. He makes over $10 million from Callaway alone, plus he has all Blue Yonder. And his sponsorships alone are $35 million a year, plus his prize money. So
let's back up 20 years. What were Tiger's sponsorships when he had American Express and AT&T and all that? What was it, like 70 million a year?
10 million each he was making, at least back in the day, or more.
Yeah, 20 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Whew. He made 10 million from Nike. I know that. But he's, you know, guys like Spieth, you know, with AT&T, with Coca-Cola, and with Under Armour, you know, there are players that are making 30, 40 million a year off the golf course for sure. Ricky Fowler was making huge money with Rocket Mortgage, doing commercials, Farmers, you know, many Corona, you know, he was filming more commercials than playing golf. So I think kind of a little bit better than DJ saying, I don't even know what RBC stood for.
Yeah. I find that hard to believe he really said that.
I did.
That's, but, yeah.
You make money off the course. Not everybody, for sure. Not everybody does. I get that. I get the whole thing. And it's nice having somebody who, or whatever, that doesn't care about a P&L, doesn't care about ROI, doesn't care about anything else. I do think Norman's agenda is to be very aggressive, to actually really hurt the PGA Tour. And so be it. Let the game be on, and there's going to be players. I hope that all the developmental tours just don't go by the wayside, and all these, there's so many great young players and there's so few spots to play.
Yeah.
I think the PGA Tour could open up PGA Tour A and PGA Tour B and still have plenty of young talent. But you look at the leaderboard, let's say at Travelers, and you look in there, there's always maybe 10 to 12 15 marquee names, and you're like, I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is. The casual fan just doesn't know who they are. You know, until there was a PGA, you really didn't know who Cameron Young really was. I mean, he's had a few good finishes, but you really have to be in tune to golf, or even Pereira and people like that. So, but
yeah, you're absolutely right.
I mean, it's really serious now. It's real. They're like three players from really making it big time. Serious. Tim, you're in this world. Frank, you're in this world, the media side. What are they going to do? Who's going to work with them television-wise, in your opinion?
Sky or Fox?
Sky can't, because they're owned by their partnership with Golf Channel and Comcast. I don't see Sky doing it. Fox, maybe, but then do corporate sponsors because of where the money is. Again, everybody speaks from both sides of their mouth. I don't know what they're going to do. Do you not see an Amazon doing something?
Yeah, I was going to say the streaming world of Netflix and Amazon and whoever else is out there. We have no idea, I don't think, that the corporate offices, and I'm making this totally up, but if you're Twitter, does Twitter have a broadcast component to some of its business down the road of what they want to do?
Let me interrupt, Tim.
Yeah.
Let's back up to what we saw last week. I had to start in the morning on Golf Channel. I had to move to Peacock. Then I had to move to USA. Then I had to move to Network.
Right.
Yeah.
NBC.
Yeah, NBC. Yeah. So
there's five difference? Different vehicles.
Yeah. So what difference is it if they do an all streaming? The modern viewer is looking at streaming more than they're looking at the damn TV. They just are.
I don't disagree. And I think that the only drawback right now is if you're showing loyalty to the PGA Tour, which is also, I think, the drawback of the Spieths and the JTs and the guys we're talking about, is they're feeling a loyalty to the PGA Tour. And that's fine. I'm like, okay, does that diminish at some point? I think it does. We've already seen guys that said, no, okay, maybe, okay, yes, I'm going to go. And I think the same thing will happen corporately if indeed they go, okay, look, we're going to sit in an office here and say we are Netflix or we're Amazon or whoever, and we're kind of going Hulu, whoever, right? That we're now all, the three of us are all older guys. We're used to seeing ABC, NBC, CBS. The younger people under 40 watch their TV programming and so many different, I mean, who knew what Hulu was going to be and all that stuff, right? So I think there's those people are out there who aren't going to be bothered by, all right, where's the money coming from? Because at the same time, they're going, we owe stockholders. We've got investors. We've got all kinds of people. If we can make $20 million this year, $100 million, whatever we can make off of televising these live events, don't we owe it to our stockholders? Don't we owe it to... And I think they will. So I think it's a little blip right now, kind of going politically incorrect. Don't know if we should be doing it. I think that'll kind of go away. As we've said, there's plenty of people that do business with that whole region of the world, not just Saudi Arabia, that have very restrictive lifestyles, if you will, and have different ways of seeing things than we do. I think they'll get past that and go, you know what, it's a business decision, and yeah, we can do this. So I think you're right, Art. I tried to find it, right? You had to go to... I guess it was at livegolf.com to see some of it.
We watched a little of it as well. The last point is the young player that's come up. I don't think, I don't know if the World Golf Hall of Fame, the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup is really what is driving them. I think they're seeing that, gosh, there's 10,000 plus players out there that can really, really play good. And this is very fragile. And listen, again, I represent a player who had a decent name in the world of long drive and can really play golf, and I cannot find a place for him to play. There's no place to play. No. He qualified for the Canadian Tour, and then from there, based on his finish, he would go to the Korn Ferry first, second, or third stage. Then it's a whole nother year at Korn Ferry, and he's got to finish top 25, go to their playoffs, and then he's on the PGA Tour, and then he gets a marginal card with no invitationals, no WGCs, no majors, no Players Championship. So the odds are stacked incredibly, against these players.
Knocked over the bag.
Wiped out.
Is Live Series...
A possibility for Jamie? Somebody like Jamie?
His name was brought up and not chosen, which I don't know what that was about or why. Yes, they, you know.
But you would certainly do it if that possibility was there and they invited him or said he could play.
34 years old is a great attraction. People love seeing him play golf. He shoots a lot of low numbers. He's an incredible added value to enhance as an attraction. And Jamie would look at it like this. I have no place to play. I mean, yeah. I have no status except a Canadian Tour event. And when I finish tied for 12th after being there for a week, I lose money. So from a, you know, to feed himself, to feed his family, you know, yes, yeah. I really think he would do it.
You know,
it's funny. Hank Keeney, a name from the past, comes in my shop a lot. And Cameron Hank was the longest hitter on the tour in his day and had a good name and did pretty decent for about 5-7 years out there. And they brought his name up and he didn't get selected. So there's a few guys that got selected. I'm like, I guess they wanted to really stretch it and show some, you know, diversity from around the world, from countries to have representation everywhere. But, I think they could fill that field with a little more excitement if you'd ask me.
Yeah.
Let's just lastly talk about announcers that jumped. You know, Darren Clark was offered the opportunity to be the color commentator for an incredible amount of money. And I know this story firsthand because I know one of his best friends. And all of a sudden he said no because the PGA Tour champion says, well, if you take that commentator job, you are off the champions tour, the PGA Tour champions. And Darren is like, I really have enough money for the rest of my life, plus some. And I love competing against my friends. And I love feeling it coming down the stretch on Sunday, having a chance to hold the trophy. And so there's something to be said. There's still a lot of people that want to be a part of history, legacy, even some young players like, you know, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, and Colin Morikawa, and now Scheffler, and the likes of these kinds of young players, Patrick Cantlay, and Xander, and Rory stepping up. The tour's still healthy, but they took a couple of gut shots, Frank, didn't they? I mean, there's some Mike Tyson belly shots that really kind of hurt. But they found their checkbook on Tuesday, didn't they?
Somehow, miraculously. Yeah, out of
nowhere. I don't understand how they're a 501c3. That's my final.
Oh, no. Let's not go there. Oh, God.
501c3.
As a disclaimer, PGA Tour, we love our PGA Tour credentials. We love you.
Yeah. Hey, Art, we appreciate your time as always. And all your hot. Do you feel like you've been on a therapist couch for the last hour?
I feel good after always talking to you guys.
You should.
Just call back. A spade a spade.
Hey, whoever, buddy, I'm ever, after this show, a tall Art.
That's it. Just Art, say it's money.
No, Art, after this show, a tall Grey Goose, cranberry juice, splash of orange juice for me. That's me.
Go hit some balls.
Boys, make birdie. We see you.
All right, man. We appreciate
see
it.
See you, Art. Thanks, buddy.
Take care, Artie.
See you, man.
Art Selinger against Selinger's Power Golf. Check them out because, as he said, if you want the best set of clubs put together, he can do it for you and help you out. So be sure to check out their website. But if you're ever in the Dallas area, it's a place to come to get. It's worth coming here to get them fitted precisely for you. So, Frank, do we need to take a break or do we need to just go?
Let's take a quick break and then come back and put a bow on it. Yeah.
Okay.
I need a drink of water or something else.
Need a drink of something. All right. You've been listening and still will to Golf Talk America. And Frank and I will be back right after this. Stay where you are.
You know, folks, I want to tell you about something that I subscribe to and absolutely love. The weather's getting warmer and we want to spend more time outside and not in the house and in the kitchen and working and cooking and cleaning and prepping and all that. So I want you to go check out one of my very favorite companies, and that's Factor. Factor makes it easy for me to eat clean 24/7 with fresh, never frozen prepared meals that are so delicious, you wouldn't believe they're actually good for you. Feel good for summer? Choose from Factor's great keto, smart keto options with built-in portion control. It's a great way to make you feel better and lose weight. They now offer 30 different meals per week, which you can choose from, and they have a variety of new meals every week. And on top of that, they give you the option to change it up and select any plan size between 4 to 18 meals per week. Busy schedule for both lunch and dinner. Well, no worries, because you can add an extra 2 or 3 or even 4 meals to your order. Folks, Factor saves me time by delivering chef-crafted meals to my front door, eliminating the hassle of grocery shopping and the sticker shock that we see in the groceries today. You can save money by using Factor. Believe it. I believe it. I use it, and I save money. They're pre-prepared. They're ready to eat in 2 minutes. That's much faster than ordering out. So they tackle the tough stuff, and I don't have to. Their registered dietitians and expert chefs work hand-in-hand to create meals with nutritious ingredients. So let me tell you what to do. I want you to head to go.factor75.com/golftalk120. I know that's a lot, so let's talk about it again. That's go.factor75.com/golftalk120 and use code golftalk120 to get, wait for it, $120 off. That's golftalk120 at go.factor75.com/golftalk120 for $120 off. Factor's great, folks. Trust me, I love it.
And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. We were just joined by,
I need a cocktail.
We didn't, and by the way, we didn't even touch on another subject we're going to get into, and that is another change of the guard, if you will, in golf, and that is the announcement that Nick Faldo is leaving CBS at the end of this season. I think he's got, another 5 events.
October, he's going to do, I don't know.
And Trevor Immelman will step in and take his spot in the 18th tower. That's only, 3 guys in the last 50 years or something, right? It was Venturi, then a very quick Lanny Watkins, and then Faldo came in off of Lanny. I think Lanny only did 2 or 3 seasons. Faldo's now done 16. So that's 3 guys. And, yeah. and if I'm not mistaken, I think Venturi did 25 years, 30 years, something like that. So, yeah, that's 3 guys for 50 years almost. So
nobody's called Nance Jimmy since Kim Venturi.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Jimmy boy, let me tell you.
Jimmy. It's because Nance is now Venturi's age.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Nance is 65 years old or whatever.
He's also a resident and neighbor of ours here in Nashville.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Anyway, so that's kind of neat. I don't know, but everybody's got different opinions about broadcasters. We bring up the whole NFL and Tony Romo and the money they make. And I don't get it. I'm like, okay, I've never watched any event. And, I've been in the business a long time. I never watch any event based on who's broadcasting it. I just watch because I want to see that game or that tournament or that whatever.
But in the old days, in the NFL, Monday Night Football, people did watch it because the broadcasters also.
Sure, that was a bit different back then because it was – they finally brought color into it, if we're getting into that. Finally with Cosell and certainly Don Meredith and all that, it became more than just – all right, Frank and Tim are here calling the game, and now you got the Rams. It's a 3rd and 3. They're going to it's up the middle. It's a, that's all it was.
Exactly.
And then suddenly they brought in this
Have
whole.
Have you done that before?
Yeah. It sounds like it, right?
Yeah. Hey, I love Don Meredith when he was doing it. Meredith was fabulous.
That's why he was great.
He was funny.
And John Madden did similar in that his personality just overtook the whole broadcast. So I get it that some people would watch because they love watching Madden and stuff. But again, if it's. In today's NFL, if it's Jacksonville against the Jets, and you tell me it's my favorite broadcaster, I'm like, I know, but it's Jacksonville and the Jets. I don't care. Versus somebody I don't, but it's a team I really want to watch. I'm going to watch the game.
Yeah.
So it kind of got nuts with the broadcast. By the way, it made me think when I was talking like that. Radio station, all sports station here in Dallas, several years ago, had a guy on there that did a bit, and his bit was he was 1930s sportscaster. Right. And so he would go to Cowboys game, let's say. And after the game, he had credentials and everything. He's covered it for the radio station. But after the game, he'd go in and he'd talk to, I believe, Wade Phillips was the coach at the time. But he did it like the 30s guys, which it was always like, why did they talk that way? If you look at old film and stuff like that of these. And so he would ask these questions. He'd go, Coach Phillips, I got a question for you over here. I'm just wondering why you did the razzle dazzle, why you turned the corner on, and he'd use all these 1930s slang terms, and Wade Phillips would be crying, laughing so hard because it was a legitimate, it was a news conference after a game, and one guy would ask this guy'd stand up, almost like he had the fedora, with press
Yeah,
with the band press and the headband.
I just wondering why. And he'd say, you did the razzle dazzle, and then you did the up and down and the back and the forth, and just give me an answer to that. And Wade would try to come up with an answer, and he'd follow up with another one. It was hilarious.
That's a pretty good shtick, yeah.
Yeah, like why did those guys talk that way back then, right?
We've got to get Artie back on to talk about, you know, his favorite broadcaster, Nick Faldo.
Oh, yeah.
And also,
he texts me all the time when Faldo's on. He texts me all the time, and he goes, oh, my God.
I know,
somebody shut him up. He couldn't. He would turn the volume down, you know. Yeah. But that's, I mean, broadcasting.
Well, what we didn't talk about is a friend of mine for years on the PGA Tour who was the vice president of rules. He was the rules. Slugger White retired from the PGA Tour, and boom, he's with LIV.
That's right. That's right.
Slugger's over there.
Well, it's a retirement fund for guys, right?
Yeah.
And you think of it that way, and you go, okay, I might be 30, I might be 40, I might be 50, Mickelson. And you're like, okay, I am. Now, some of these, I get it, might be set for life anyway, you might say, and it's relative. But is there ever enough money? I've never seen a billionaire decide. I mean, I get that Warren Buffett and stuff, they give a lot of money, and that's great. But they don't give it all away, right? If you're down to your last billion, you still have a billion. You might have given 10 away, but you still have a billion.
Now, how much is a billion? How many million is a billion?
A thousand?
A thousand million. A thousand million is a billion.
Yeah. It's hard to run out of that kind of money, right?
You won't run out of that kind of money. You might, given what's going on in our country right now and how it's being run.
Yeah, you might.
But we're not going to go there.
Yeah.
Well, because I've been watching the market, and holy crap.
Yeah, yeah. It's not even. There's no sense to watch it.
And now here's the other thing. Just as a sidebar here, when you fill up your car, our federal government's going to waive for 3 months the 18-cent per gallon tax.
How good is
that? Wow. Three, add it up, folks. How many gallons do you put in your car? If you've got a 20-gallon tank or whatever it is, say 20 gallons at $5 a gallon is $100. Yeah. Take 18 cents per gallon times 20. How much is that? $3.60.
Yeah.
Whippy.
Thank you.
Who cares?
By the way, here's another fun fact while we're going down the political road. That same proposal came up when we had a similar problem with gas prices back in 2008. Barack Obama was the president, and he was asked, or somebody brought up the point of having a brief relief from the tax. Same thing we're talking about, right? Not doing it permanently, but just for the next little bit to help people out. And Obama said, no, we wouldn't even consider doing that. Anybody that would consider getting rid of that tax is just doing it for political reasons to garner favor for a re-election.
Okay, and with that,
he literally said that back in 2008 that they're only doing it as a sham to make you kind of go, "Oh, look how good we are! Look what we're doing to help you out." So that was Obama saying that, and here's the current
vice president
saying, "Here's what we're going to do," and you're like, "Okay, well,
yeah, really."
They were smart enough not to do it back then. Going, it's going to be such a minimal effect, and here we are. So yeah, it's I don't know, Frank. I do worry a bit. Not about the world in general. It's always kind of chaotic, and then it's wonderful, and it's chaotic again. But the economy of the entire world, which we're in the middle of the biggest economy in the United States, but with wars going on and coming out of the pandemic and inflation, it's a bit – I really don't
– The Ukraine, the business, folks, just for your information, the Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe, basically. Wheat.
Yeah, yeah.
Grain.
They normally are.
Not now.
Yeah.
So get ready. Anyway, we won't get into all that. This is not a political show. I didn't mean to go there, but I had to. You fill up your car, and OPEC is based where? And we're talking LIV and oil and gasoline and diesel. Anyway.
Biden's going to meet with the Saudis in July.
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe they're going to take over the LIV tour.
See if they can open the spigot a little bit more to get kind of get more. God. So that's the thing is when it comes to the LIV, my final thought on that is, and I've said this to you before, Frank, is why the golfers? Again, if you're against that country and you don't like the royal family and all the other things for reasons, then why don't you look at everything that you do that might be involving that country and that regime and not do it?
The best thing that would ever happen for West Virginia?
Golf is it.
Is electric cars.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to make electricity.
Yeah.
You mean?
I mean, it just seems unfair.
You're going to have a little coal.
and I think that's Art's point is, don't just call it what it is, Phil, or anybody else. Just say, hey, I'm going here because they're paying stupid money. And if you got that same opportunity, you Joe writer, broadcaster, insurance salesman, you probably would jump at it too, right? I mean, because there's a pretty good chance that you're already supplementing some bad governments, if you will, pick one out of the world, with products that you buy. Look around. What do you have that's from these different countries that have... And you don't sit there and go in the grocery store, or you don't go in the car parts department or anything else and go, where's it from? Oh, no, I can't support. You do. You buy what you buy. And so just call it what it is, Phil. Go, you know what? It's $200 freaking million dollars that for the rest of my life and the rest of my kids and grandkids' lives, they don't have to worry about.
And on our
Grandpa
next show.
Grandpa Phil took care of them. Don't we all wish we had a Vanderbilt grandfather or a Rockefeller grandfather that was like, well, thanks, Grandpa, for doing that for me. 100 years ago.
There's so a CNN newscaster that had a Vanderbilt mother.
Yeah.
Anderson Cooper's mom, Gloria Vanderbilt. People don't know that. Anyway, that's a bunch of junk.
Yeah.
Just closing out the show. Random, let's get out of here.
The random thoughts that go through your head sometimes.
I just, you know.
How did you get through Ole Miss? Did you just sit there and like, your mind just wandered when you were
I was
in
on
class?
Full scholarship.
Did so you go to class? Did you go to class?
Very seldom.
Only if I had to.
Ole Miss is in the College World Series, folks. Rebels are in.
Ole Miss doing good. Ole Miss doing good. Texas got Manning. That's all I got to say about that.
Okay, bye.
We'll see.
Bye. Get out of here.
We are done. Thank you so much, Art Selinger, for joining us. We do appreciate it. Check out our sponsors, Club Corp. Go to clubcorp.com. Change into invite. But right now, clubcorp.com. Find a club near you, and you can join it. Enjoy the heck out of it. And French Lick, Indiana. We're going to be there in a few weeks, and we'll have a great time there and tell you more about the great resort, casino, and everything in French Lick. So check them out for a nice summer vacation. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us. Join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.